You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's five AL East beat reporters. We'll be talking about the closer situation and second base for the Blue Jays. We'll be talking about the outfield and the bullpen for the Red Sox. We'll be talking about the outfield and the rotation for the Baltimore Orioles. We'll be talking about nearly the entire Rays roster, but in particular the middle infield and Evan Longoria. And we'll be talking about the Yankees pitching staff from first inning to ninth. We are looking ahead to spring training. It's just about here. Thanks, everybody, for listening to MLB.com Extras. Talking Baltimore Orioles with MLB.com's Orioles beat reporter, Brittany Giroli. We're talking spring training, and the Orioles seem to be one of the more set clubs going into the spring, which is interesting given that they had a lot more go out than come in. So it seems like the biggest questions for them involve health. And although I know we've talked about this a lot, now that we're up on camp, let's revisit those two big topics to start with. First of all, what do you expect to see from Matt Wieters this spring? How do you expect to see him be used, and kind of what you expect his program to be?
Well, I expect he's not going to catch a whole lot of games, really, on spring training. They're going to want to kind of build him up, work into it. He's been really kind of strengthening that arm, gradually increasing what he's been able to do long toss-wise. So I do think he's going to be able to catch bullpens, things like that, but just in conditioning. But he's going to be slow to start. Manny Machado, on the other hand, I think is going to get a lot of at-bats, especially early. He hasn't really played a whole lot of games the past 2 years. He's had back-to-back season-ending knee surgeries. I think he needs to get in the flow of the game and needs to get in the mix. He has a better chance than Matt Wieters at this point to be in that opening day lineup. So it's going to be a different approach for both of those guys. But at the end of the day, I think they both are going to play into the Orioles in April. I don't think either guy is going to be sidelined very long. And keep in mind, they played most of the year without both of those guys.
And that does lead into my next question, which you kind of answered, but what do you think the likelihood is that we'll see Wieters as basically a full go when the season starts?
I'd say right now it's probably 50-50 until you really get into spring training. See how many at-bats he's getting, see what kind of shape he is in. It's just tough. He said at FanFest to all the reporters that if everything goes as planned, he would be eligible for opening day. Now, you don't know if it's going to go as planned for the next 6 weeks. You don't know how he's going to respond to catching, how he's going to bounce back. I do think Manny Machado will be ready for opening day. I think Matt Wieters probably will be a week or two after that.
It's sort of interesting to look at Machado because there is, to some extent, a parallel to last year. How different or how similar is his situation to where he was at 12 months ago coming into the spring?
It's similar, but he's had the advantage of time this time around. He had that surgery several months before he had the last one, so he's ahead of schedule. And keep in mind, he missed the first month of the year, so they hope that now he's significantly ahead of where he was so that he'll be able to participate in spring training because I think not having a spring training, him coming back, he just never looked right. He was never the Manny Machado that fans had seen two seasons ago. So I think it's similar. But again, them shutting him down when they did, deciding to just take care of it, was probably the smartest move for everybody involved.
And then the third key member of that club that they had to do without last October is Chris Davis. He's not coming back from an injury, but he has come back from a rough season. How much is on him this spring, putting aside the suspension, just to sort of get right and get himself into a position where he is the core lineup piece that they expect and need him to be?
Yeah, they like you said, they need him to be a core piece of this lineup, and there is a lot of pressure on him. I mean, keep in mind that for guys like Chris Davis and Matt Wieters, this is also their last year before free agency. This is their last year under team control. So they're playing for a lot. And Chris Davis has made it pretty clear he wants to get a lot of at-bats in spring training. He wants to kind of get his feet back under him. He feels like suffering that oblique strain that he had early on in the season, he was never really able to come back fully from that. And, of course, that 25-game suspension didn't help matters. So I think for Chris Davis, getting past opening day, putting that suspension behind him, and really starting to learn to be Chris Davis again. And new hitting coach Scott Coolball came from the Rangers,
very familiar with Chris Davis. It'll be interesting to see what tweaks and adjustments he makes with him to get him back on track.
Looking at like we said at the start, there don't seem to be a whole lot of questions, but I do wonder a little bit about the outfield. With Deaza and with Snyder, both of those guys certainly could be capable of being more or less everyday guys, but they also aren't necessarily everyday guys. Do you see the corner outfield spots as in any way in flux or any kind of competition in spring, or are those guys basically set as the left and right fielder?
Well, there's definitely competition, because what about David Lowe? He's a guy who it's easy to forget about. He had pretty disappointing last season, but if you look at the last 2 months of the year, batting average-wise, he was one of their best players. So he had a concussion, dealt with some head issues early in spring training that I think probably had lingering effects. And he's a guy who's quick, who's defensive-minded, so he's going to challenge for that left field spot as well. I think it's going to be a lot of matchups of platoon early. You're going to see a lot of guys moved around. Delmon Young could get a lot of reps in right field. He figures to play a little bit more of a part than he did last season. So to me, that outfield competition, especially when you've got Cuban prospect Dariel Alvarez in camp and really pushing to be at the big league level at some point this season, that's one of the more interesting storylines, interesting competitions heading into camp, is what are they going to do with all these outfielders? How does everybody fit, and how are they best able to make up for the losses of Nick Markakis and Nelson Cruz?
How would you handicap that? How do you think that kind of shakes down as we're talking 6-8 weeks from now and going into opening day? How do you think that all is going to look?
I think they like Deaza a lot. In a small sample size last year, he was excellent. He's also got the most experience at leadoff, and now that they don't have Markakis, they need a leadoff man. So I think you're going to see Deaza a lot in left field. Travis Snyder, as you mentioned, is another option, and certainly he could be fine playing right field as well. I don't know if Travis Snyder becomes more of a guy than just strictly a platoon guy. I do think Dariel Alvarez will be up, and he will be up soon. I'd be shocked if he still wasn't up by the trade deadline right around the midseason point. I just think he's too good defensively and too good of a catch-and-throw guy for them to not have up. So I think Deaza plays a big role. I think Alvarez plays a big role. And I think Delmon Young, because he just gave them so many good at-bats, he's much more confident, comfortable in right field, has a lot more experience in right field. I think he's going to factor pretty heavily into the outfield equation as well.
The Orioles seem to have a pretty set five starters, but they've also got an eight-figure-a-year reliever in Ubaldo Jimenez and a guy who recently was one of the top prospects in baseball in Dylan Bundy, who conceivably could be knocking on the door. How do you see the rotation coming together this spring?
Well, the good news is they're returning everybody, which is pretty rare, I think, if you look around baseball. But they have one extra guy for those rotation spots. So the real question is, and it was a question much of last year, where does Kevin Gausman fit in? If he is one of the best five, how can you punish him for having a minor league option and send him down to AAA Norfolk? Now, you have to get Ubaldo Jimenez right. You can't afford early on to bury him. You have to give this guy a chance. He signed a four-year deal. He's only got 1 year behind him. So I don't think you can really afford to bury him. And besides Gausman, you don't have a lot of depth in AAA. So I think unless Kevin Gausman handily outpitches the rest of the rotation, I don't see how he doesn't start the season in AAA. Now, of course, injuries, underperformance, things like that could certainly shape how this all shakes out. But I think right now you have to keep your starters stretched out. You have to keep these guys. They're very valuable. And if Kevin Gausman is going to go down to AAA Norfolk, we've seen how quickly the Orioles make roster moves on a daily basis. So in my opinion, all things equal, I think that's probably what's going to end up happening.
And how does Bundy fit into it, if not this spring, then later in the year?
Yeah, not this spring, I don't think, just because he's making up a lot. I mean, you're talking about a guy who really wasn't fully recovered last season, still trying to get it back from Tommy John, but he should be a full go in spring training, which is important. I think they want him to go to the minor leagues. They want him to dominate again, get his confidence back, get his whole arsenal, his mixed secondary pitches, get that velocity, which started to creep up towards the end of the minor league season again, get that back, and then he could become an option. I think he's more of a mid-season addition. If he's pitching well, if this club needs a guy, he could also be somebody that they bring up, similar to the Rays and David Price in 2008, a guy they bring up as a power arm to use in the back of that bullpen. If
they don't replace Andrew Miller, who's a very tough guy to replace, having another guy who can absolutely dominate hitters, which Dylan Bundy has shown he can do in spurts, could be the best way to get him up here if they don't need him for the rotation.
All right. Well, Brittany Giroli, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking New York Yankees with MLB.com Yankees beat reporter Brian Hoke. Brian, it's a fairly set Yankee roster as spring begins, and yet it's also one with a whole lot of questions, which is kind of an interesting combination. It's a lot of how pieces fit together and things like that. I think probably the biggest question a lot of people have for this club coming into spring is the ninth inning. And I know we've talked about this, but how do you see them sort of making this closer competition or evaluation or whatever it is work as the spring goes on?
Yeah, I think it's funny how you mentioned it. You know who the names are going to be. You just don't know what order they're going to be in. And I think that extends to a lot of different areas of the team. But going into camp, Joe Girardi says he's fine with having no set closer. You don't have to have one on the first day of spring training. You don't really have to name one until April. So I think you're going to see Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller go head-to-head. And I think there's really no wrong choice there. They're both dominant against lefties and righties. I mean, look at what Betances did last year. I mean, just with his size and the velocity. And then Andrew Miller did the same thing for the Red Sox and the Orioles last year. There's a reason they went after this guy. He's going to fit into that bullpen, whether it's the eighth or ninth inning, however you want to match it up. I don't think there's a wrong call, as I said, for Girardi. But if I had to guess right now, I'd say that Betances takes over the ninth inning and Andrew Miller slots into the eighth.
Does either of those guys need to prove anything or show anything? And as a follow-up to that, can they even? Is it really possible to sort of show the manager or the coaching staff anything they don't already know?
I really think if they come in and can show, just be healthy, be able to give the Yankees some hope that they can repeat what happened last year. I mean, you know, it's interesting. These two guys, I mean, as dominant as their 2014 was, if you roll the clock back a few years before, I mean, Betances was a failed starter who looked like he was about to wash out. They sent him all the way down to double-A ball, and Miller had some struggles too. They both found it in the bullpen. I think that being able to reduce your pitches and really focus on just being dominant with one or two offerings really went a long way for both these guys. They're pretty similar, considering the fact that they're right-handed and left-handed, but they're pretty similar in that they followed similar career trajectories, and you know, obviously they found a home in the late innings. So I would expect that if they're healthy and can do what they did last year, Joe Girardi is going to have a really great bullpen to call on.
There's an elephant named Alex in the room, and I look, he's clearly not going to be the third baseman. Maybe he gets a little time at first base. How do you see Alex Rodriguez's spring going? So we talked a lot about how he fits in once the regular season starts, but how do they sort of evaluate him, get him into shape? I mean, it's kind of unknown territory, a guy who hasn't played a game in a year and a half.
Yeah, you just don't know, and really he's played about 30 games in the last 2 years, so it's been a while for Alex. So I think the only fair thing to do for him, and Girardi has said this too, is to have him come in, have as many at-bats as you possibly can. And really, I wouldn't read a whole lot into even the first 2 weeks of exhibition games, because he's going to be facing a lot of guys who he's never heard of, guys who are wild, who might be trying to brush him back or, you know, scared to face Alex Rodriguez. I would wait until the last weeks of camp, which is when you really start to see the guys that you would see during the regular season, or at least a Triple-A caliber pitching. But he's going to have to play. You're going to have to give him at-bats just to find out where he is. I mean, he's 39 going on 40. He's got two bad hips. Put all the other suspension stuff aside. Even if there was none of that in the room, you would still have questions about where his talent level is at this stage in his career. So if he shows he can still get around on fastballs, if he can hit upper echelon pitching, he's going to play. I think it's just as simple as that. Can he do that? I don't know. I don't think the Yankees know. You really have to get him out on the field and see. He looked overmatched at times late in the 2013 year, but he didn't hit left-handed pitching at all. But I think if you go on his career track record, you might say that's an aberration. And with a real regular as it can be for Alex at this point, off-season and spring training, maybe you see different results.
The Yankees have a rotation that is very high upside, and I think it's not unfair to say also pretty high bust potential considering the number of risky guys. In particular with guys like Tanaka and Sabathia, who are, I think it's fair to say, risky for different reasons, is there any likelihood of taking it easy on those guys in the spring, ramping them back, saving them any innings, saving any bullets this spring, or are they both just going to go like it's any normal spring?
I think you kind of have to hit the ground running with both of them, considering the injury problems from last year. Now you might not want to have them going crazy early in camp, but you're going to have to build those innings up because you need to get their pitch counts up. So by the end of camp, they should be, in theory, right there with the rest of the starters. I know Sabathia is going to start a little bit behind because he's coming back from that knee surgery, and he's been working out all offseason at Yankee Stadium. They say the reports are good. We'll see. We'll see if he can still be a one or two type guy or if he's just going to be, at this point in his career, he's a workhorse who you hope can take the ball 30 times and be a solid three or a four. And I think, honestly, at this point, the Yankees would be okay with that. The story with Tanaka is a lot different. Obviously, you saw how great he was, especially those first 17 starts last year. I mean, he was setting the world on fire. He was one of the best pitchers, if not the best, in the American League. And then, obviously, everybody knows what happened that July day in Cleveland. He came back. He made the two starts. That's encouraging. The fact that he didn't have any kind of setbacks over the winter and had a normal training program in Japan, that's encouraging. But you got to get him on the mound, and you can't really hold back too much because he's still got to be that guy. He's got to be confident in snapping off that splitter, which is so devastating. I mean, it just gave hitters fits, but can his arm hold up to it? I think that's a huge question for the Yankee season, and honestly, having a healthy Tanaka or not could be the difference between them getting the playoffs or not.
How big a question do you think Pineda is? I mean, I doubt he's a 1.8 ERA pitcher in reality, but are you confident and are they confident penciling him in as a front-of-the-rotation pitcher if healthy, or is there still some sort of sample size concern about maybe he just had a hot 2 months at the end of the year?
Yeah, I would be confident. I think they are, too. I think that when he was on the mound, he was electric. The problem with him and his entire Yankee career has been keeping him on the field and off the disabled list. So I would look for that to come back. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be that guy. He's been up over 170 innings before. Obviously, he hasn't done as a Yankee, but that rookie year with Seattle, he's shown he can do it in the big leagues, and he wore down a little bit there. So I would expect his second half, if he was completely healthy, he might fatigue a little bit. The Yankees were talking about having him on some kind of innings count, which obviously they never had to get to last year. I would assume that would probably be the case this year, so I wouldn't look for him to go out and throw 200 or 220 innings. But I think that if he can take the ball regularly and stay off the DL, this could be a very important part of their rotation going forward, and not just for this year, but after that as well.
How would you handicap the fifth spot competition?
I really don't think there's too much of a competition at this point because Chris Capuano's coming in, and this is a serviceable guy. He's a lefty. They liked what they saw last year. They liked his clubhouse IQ. They thought he fit well in the clubhouse. Look, he's not going to make any all-star teams. He's not going to strike out the world, but he can be a serviceable guy. And really, you know, you're looking for a placeholder because Ivan Nova is supposed to come back around June 1st, and you leave the light on for that. You don't count on it 100%, but, you know, chances are Tommy John surgery being what it is, he's had no setbacks. So you think that that's definitely on the table. They've got Adam Warren coming into camp. He'll compete as a starting pitcher. Esmiel Rogers with the Yankees late last year. He got on the mound a little bit. You saw some stuff from him. I think that Capuano is probably the favorite going in just because Warren can fit so many different roles for this team. But Joe Girardi really liked what Adam Warren did last year. You know, he had one bad month and four or five very good ones. So I think that you kind of iron that out. You figure out what went wrong that 1 month there, and you take the good into this season. And whether it's in the rotation or the bullpen, I do expect that Adam Warren's going to help this team a lot this year.
And that's sort of why I asked, is that Warren is a nice pitcher and has been quite good for them. Is he most likely part of the bullpen if he's not in the rotation?
Yeah, absolutely. I at this point in Adam Warren's career, I would not see him going to AAA. I don't really see the development part of that. I don't see what the benefit would be. So I think that if Warren doesn't wind up in the rotation. He slots right back into that late inning mix there, where they've got a few hard throwing guys that they've assembled there in the end with the Carpenters and the Wilsons, and Warren could fit right in there. Or, you know, if something goes wrong in spring training, and you always know, especially being the Yankees, I mean, they used 13 different starting pitchers last year. There's always a chance Warren could open the year in the rotation.
All right, well, Ryan Hoke, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, talking Toronto Blue Jays with MLB.com Blue Jays beat reporter Gregor Chisholm. Gregor, we are just about there. It's just about time for everybody in baseball to get on airplanes and go south or west or both. I feel like the Jays are really one of the more interesting teams going into camp, certainly one of the more interesting contenders, because it feels like they have more questions than a lot of the teams that view themselves as contenders, a couple of big ones in particular. And I want to start with the ninth inning. You wrote recently that it looks like maybe a two-man race. What's your understanding of what they're looking at right now as far as the ninth inning?
Yeah, I think it really is down to two guys, and most of those two guys would be Brett Cecil and Aaron Sanchez. And Aaron Sanchez is a particularly interesting candidate because, you know, it wasn't that long ago that it really seemed like the Blue Jays wanted to use him in the fifth spot of the rotation. But I think that was at a time when they really expected to do a little bit more with the bullpen than they were able to do in the end. So I think now, out of necessity, they really have to move him into the bullpen just because they really do need another right-handed power arm. And he filled that role for the Jays last year in the second half and really excelled in that, really went to the next level. And it was really a flawless debut for him last year. So he's going to be very strongly in the mix. And then the other guy, Cecil, is someone who's been very reliable over the last couple of years, ever since he made the transition from a starter into the bullpen. Now, the question with him is whether or not the Blue Jays would be best served keeping him more in the role that he's been in, where he's been a guy that you could bring in anywhere from the sixth inning to the eighth inning, depending on the situation. He's been a high-leverage guy. But he's someone who Gibbons in the past hasn't shied away from using for a full inning either. He's not someone who is your traditional lefty specialist. Gibbons hasn't been afraid to use him in a bit more of an expanded role. So it really is going to be between those two guys. And the fact that Sanchez now looks like he's going to the pen, that does hurt the rotation a little bit, but there's no question that it gives them a much-needed arm down there, because there really isn't much from the right side unless the Blue Jays are really hoping that someone like Steve Belabar has a big comeback year compared to what he was in 2014.
And will it just be basically a straight competition, whoever pitches best is the guy, or will it be one of those things where it sort of depends on how other pieces fit together?
I think it's going to depend on how other pieces fit together. I think some of it will depend on whether or not the Blue Jays can find another lefty that's reliable. You know, if Rob Rasmussen makes the team, he pitched a little bit for the Blue Jays last year. If he can become another lefty for the Blue Jays to use, I think they really like the ability to have two lefties, someone else to go along with a guy like Aaron Loop kind of in the middle innings. So if they can get someone else to kind of slot into those middle innings, and then it could be a guy like Cecil. If not, they might look at it and be like, we really need Cecil's, you know, innings to come from the same role as he's been in, from the sixth to eighth, because, you know, he's definitely been a valuable piece. So I think it's going to be a little bit more than just the performance, but, you know, it's clear that the Blue Jays are really just looking at those two guys. The only one who might be a little bit of a dark horse is Aaron Loop, but, you know, everything that John Gibbons and Alex Anthopoulos have said over the last couple of weeks, it really is a two-man race, and there's no question that both of those guys will pitch in the late innings. It's just a matter of which order they will go in. And you know, Gibbons is also a guy who typically likes to have a closer. He likes to have guys who have defined roles. So while there might be a feeling out phase in the spring, I think for the most part, ideally they would like to avoid the closer by committee. They would like to give someone the title, so that everyone knows exactly where they're slotted in, when they need to be warmed up, and what part of the order that they're expected to face.
And you touched on this some, but this does, at least in some ways, connect to the question about the back of the rotation. How do you see that shaking down? And again, as we sort of look ahead to spring training, how do you think they go about about answering that question, not just what's the answer, but kind of how do they get to the answer to that question as they go through spring training?
Yeah, absolutely. And that one will definitely come down to performance. It's going to be between Marco Estrada and Daniel Norris. I think ideally the Blue Jays would probably give Norris a little bit more time in the minor leagues, almost a similar approach to what they did with Marcus Stroman last year, where, you know, by all accounts, there was some talk last spring that he might be ready for opening day and might be ready to go. But the Blue Jays wanted to give him a little bit more time in the minors, so they brought him along a little bit slowly at first. Then he came up, made his first appearance in the bullpen, and then by late May was in the Jays' rotation for good for the rest of the year. I wouldn't be surprised if they take a very similar approach with Norris. I think he'd really, really have to shine in spring training in order to get that role. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Estrada is the guy coming out of camp, but that job's also not going to be handed to him. So if he struggles in spring, that could certainly change things. But he's a bit more of a veteran presence in the rotation. He's a guy who, you know, his numbers last year in Milwaukee, there's no question that the numbers were better in the bullpen. And originally that was something that the Blue Jays were kind of looking at him doing in Toronto as well. But he does have kind of a versatile and durable arm, someone who can eat up some innings at the back end of that rotation. So I think he's the guy who would start with the job as long as things go well for him in spring training, but he's also someone who's going to have to pitch well pretty much the entire time in order to keep that job, because there's no question that Norris is going to become a factor at some point. And as we all know, you need a lot more starters than just five. And if Norris doesn't make the team on opening day, it won't be long before he gets that opportunity to grab a rotation spot. And then the hope is once he eventually gets it, that he doesn't give it up.
And then there's the one, to me, seems like big question in the lineup, and there may be another, but the big question in the lineup is second base. And it's kind of the same question. On the one hand, how do you think it turns out? But also, you know, how do they get there? Are they trying to figure out, is Gwynn's the guy? Are they trying to figure out a way to get Devin Travis in there? How exactly do you see them apportioning playing time and sort of trying to answer that question this spring?
Yeah, that's going to be really one of the competitions to watch, because there's really a lot of guys in the mix and there's not really a clear-cut candidate to take over the starting job. I mean, technically it was up for grabs last spring as well, but I mean, I think everybody knew that the job was belonged to Ryan Goins. I mean, he didn't have a very good spring, yet he ended up being the opening day guy. Now, the problem always with him has been, the production with the bat. There's no question about the glove. The Blue Jays love the ability that he has to cover a lot of ground, and he really is a plus defender up the middle. So there's definitely the benefit of that, but he has to give them something with the bat in order to justify giving him regular playing time, and that's something he hasn't been able to do. If you're hitting below 200, doesn't really matter how good your glove is, you're not going to be able to make up for the almost automatic out that he has been at times during his major league career. So he's definitely going to be in the mix again, but he's going to have to show something. I think someone to really watch this spring is going to be Meister Asturias. He was someone who, you know, at the start of last year really started to seem like he was taking that job away from Ryan Goins, and then he tripped on the dugout steps and ruined his knee and was gone for the year in April. So, 2 years ago, he was also the guy, and he really kind of struggled. Last year was supposed to be his bounce back year. But now they're hoping that it's going to be this year. And the big thing for him is going to be how much movement he has, whether he still has the ability to cover some ground at second base. He's supposed to have made a full recovery, supposed to be fully ready for spring training. But I don't think anyone really knows the type of performance you can expect out of him until you actually see him on the field every day. But as of now, I would say he's probably the favorite to win some time. And Travis is almost similar to the way that they treated some of the pitchers, just like we were talking about with Norris. I wouldn't be surprised if they want to start him off in the minor leagues. I think that's an ideal situation for him. He's never played above Double-A. I think they'd like to get him some time at Triple-A Buffalo, bring him along a little bit more slowly at the start of the year, and then kind of make way for a mid-season call-up, and then the job probably belongs to him. But I mean, that also is something that could change in the spring. If he comes out and really excels and really outperforms everybody else at second base, there's no question that because of the lack of you know, really legitimate candidates at that spot. Travis is probably the one with the most upside. So if he comes in and proves that he's ready, he's also a guy that could steal that job away from a more veteran guy like Asturias or even someone like Goins. But for now, I wouldn't be surprised if that's more of a late May, early June type scenario.
And then the last, what seems like an opening, though it seems also a little clearer, is center field. It seems like there's a favorite there, but also until it's settled, it's not really settled. How do you see center field coming together?
Yeah, Dalton Pompey should be the guy. I think it would be a major upset if anything happens there during spring training. But the thing with him is I mean, he really came out of nowhere for the most part last year. He really established himself as one of the club's top prospects as the season progressed. But he wasn't really on the radar before that. And, you know, he really performed in September and caught a lot of attention and really basically won the starting center fielder job for this year during a two-week stretch last September. So there's some danger with that because the sample size is incredibly small from his time in the major leagues, and I don't think anyone can really predict exactly how he's going to do. But as of now, that job definitely belongs to him. He's going to receive a little bit of competition from a guy like Kevin Pillar. I think the worst-case scenario would see the Blue Jays being forced to move someone like Michael Saunders into center field. Right now, that's not on the table. They like him in left field better than center. But if something happens midway through the year where Pompey's really not performing with the bat, that's something that they could look at as a backup situation. But for now, Pompey's the guy. They seem to have lots of faith that he, you know, even though he's a rookie, that he has a mentality a little bit more of a guy who's, you know, 4 or 5 years older than he actually is. So they think he's going to be quick to adapt this season. But he has to be considered a question mark just because the track record isn't really there yet. And I mean, this is a guy who began last year in Class A Dunedin. So it's a testament to how far he's come, but he's going to need to prove early on that he belongs as well.
All right, well, Gregory Chisholm, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, talking Tampa Bay Rays with MLB.com's Rays beat reporter Bill Chastain. Bill, the Rays come into spring with more unfamiliar faces than I can remember in a long time, even for an organization that is known for turnover. If you had to pick one spot that is the most sort of contentious, the most worth watching as this spring begins, where's your eye going first?
I think I'm going to go with the middle infield. I'm not going to go one position because everybody pretty much has penciled in Struble Cabrera to be the shortstop. But I think Tim Beckham might be an interesting figure in camp. He really looked great when I saw him out there working out. You know, he had the knee injury going into last year, or he probably would have been with the Major League squad then. And for those not familiar with him, of course, he's the number one pick of the 2008 draft, and it's been kind of a long journey for him. But I think given the circumstances, he might see a lot of playing time this year.
How do you think the outfield shakes down? I mean, it certainly seems as though Desmond Jennings is the center fielder, but it seems like there might be some competition, some intrigue in both left and right. How do you see that coming together?
Well, first we got to see if the Jesus starts the season with the team. Right now, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see if the Jesus is with the team and healthy, and I think he could be a big plus if he is and back to the player that he originally got. You know, I think this guy could be your leadoff hitter against right-handed pitching. Although, you know, off the mark things they like to do, I wouldn't even be surprised to see Jaso up in the leadoff spot. Based on, you know, his batting eye. But the way I see the outfield, I think Souza's going to be given a real good chance at right. Of course, Jennings in center. Who knows, Jennings might end up being going back to left field and having Kiermaier in center. You've also got Brandon Guyer there and Mikey Maytook, who's coming up from AAA, whether he makes the team or not. So all of them have some interesting components. But it's hard to really look at any of them as lock, you know, guys who are a lock with that position.
How will they go about apportioning those at bats and innings in the outfield this spring with as many guys as they need to get a look at and get a read on?
Well, you know, you covered it as long as I did, and you know that a lot of what they do in spring is, you know, they have a predetermined idea about what they're going to do, and they just don't tell us. But I would imagine they'll just, you know, apportion all of those guys some at-bats and kind of see how they're doing. But I don't think, you know, a position will probably be won or lost in the outfield based on spring training. I think they probably have a pretty good idea on that. So we'll just have to see, you know, who's there left standing at the end of the thing. But, again, a big factor is going to be what happens with David DeJesus.
Are you expecting a much different feeling camp with the first new manager in quite a few years?
Oh, I think so, and not necessarily, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just like I recently saw Joe Maddon, and we were laughing. I was telling him that, you know, an old preacher I used to know would tell me it was good to move every 6 or 7 years so you could run up your old sermons and use them again. So, you know, I'm not saying his message got stale, but, you know, sometimes change is good. And, you know, one of the things I've already seen that the Cash seems to be open to doing is giving guys more chance to lock down a position and not have as much, you know, have such a transient lineup as far as, you know, matchups and this and that. I know personally I always wondered what would happen if you left certain guys in there and let them get comfortable, because I do think baseball is a game of comfort. But they also have had a really good history of playing the matchups. So, you know, it's kind of catch-22 either way you look at it.
What do you expect to see from Evan Longoria this spring? I mean, he's a pretty enormous piece of this club. I think it's safe to say last season looks a whole lot different if he just has a normal year.
Yeah, and I think it's funny. I know yesterday or today we're running the thing on the rebound, the players on the rebound, and I put his name down as a rebound guy. And it's kind of funny based on the fact that he was their best offensive player last year. But they were not Longoria-type numbers. And I know he was as frustrated as anybody. I think going into last season, if you'd have said or told anybody that Longoria is going to play 162 games, you say, man, the Rays have a good chance of having, you know, the kind of offense they need to get to the postseason. But whether it's, you know, the grind of not having protection in the order and then you start pressing and going outside of your strike zone or whatever, for whatever reason, he did have an un-Evan Longoria-type season. But if there's anybody who's going to be a good bet to come back, I think it would be him.
Is there any reason to worry about his health or anything, or is he fully good to go and normal coming into this camp?
Well, you look at it, he's played 160 games in 2013 and 162 last year. So the only thing I've heard in that regard was Cash was saying back as far as the winter meetings that he planned to talk to him about, you know, whether or not that's a productive thing. Maybe he should have a few more days off, you know, to kind of keep fresh. But I know last year I think Gorey kind of felt like, you know, he had to keep playing to try and get out of that funk, because he really never found that prolonged hot streak like he normally does every summer.
One thing you'll often see with a really good hitter, a really good player, is when things are going poorly around him, sometimes those guys will get out of their approach, and it can be hard to get that back. Do you think that just the simple fact of a fresh start and maybe helps him kind of get back to the patience and the command of the strike zone as he had? Because that's one of the numbers that changed for him last year. You know, that walk-strikeout balance was not what we're used to seeing from him.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what we were saying before. You know, what I was saying before is that somehow he got out of, you know, that approach, I think, where – you know, you're looking in this zone or that zone, and I think maybe the tendency when you are the big dog is to kind of try and do a little bit more than you can, or, you know, that's possible. So I definitely think probably a little time off, get his head back into it. And who knows, maybe some of these guys in the lineup can evolve to be the guys to protect him. I know in talking to Jaso the other day, I would look for him to have improved offensive numbers based on the fact that he probably won't be behind the plate much. You know, catching is such a grind. I mean, this guy could be a guy that could be maybe in front or behind Longoria that might give him a little bit of help. But I definitely agree with you. I think Longoria has to go back to accepting his walks, and that would probably make a lot of things fall into place for him.
You look at the Rays' rotation, and the front four is awfully good. It's good as nearly any in the American League, I would say. And then it's a little unclear what happens at the back. What do they do about figuring out who rounds out that rotation?
Well, of course, and also the caveat on the back part of that is that the front will be bolstered once Matt Moore comes back. But, you know, for the time being, it looks like Nathan Carnes, Kalo May, and perhaps Burt Smith could be in there. I'd say Burt Smith is probably the dark horse shot, you know, who came over in the three-way deal with, or the three-team deal with the Padres. But, you know, that's a pretty good situation to be in. Now, I know Kalo May is out of options, so I think if he does not win the spot, you could probably see him moving into the bullpen. So, but I wouldn't be surprised if that also gives him the leg up to be the number five guy. And then, you know, when Moore comes back, you could slide him on into the bullpen. But, you know, those are some pretty good guys. And that was one of the reasons I was not so down on what they did with Hellickson. I fully expect Hellickson to rebound. You know, he had a little bit of a, you know, elbow problem going into last year. He had the surgery. And I think sometimes it takes a while to get back and find that strike zone again, you know, the fine line that you need to be successful. So I expect Hellickson to be back, but while I do, you know, why pay a guy $4.5 million when you've got these other guys pushing up, these younger guys, particularly for the number five spot or number four spot or whatever. So I think that was a good calculated, I mean, I wouldn't even call it a risk. I just think it was a good solid play by the Rays.
And what, where is Matt Moore as the spring starts, as far as his program, his rehab? How much of him will we see? Is there any shot of seeing him in a game before camp is out, or is he not that far along?
Oh, no, we won't see him in a game during camp. But I do believe, you know, we're looking late June, early July. And I think he's pushing for more than that because he's felt really good the whole time. I know he's had no setbacks, but you know, with a young guy like that, you know they're going to be really ultra-conservative.
All right, well, Bill Chastain, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Boston Red Sox with possibly the happiest baseball writer in America, baseball reporter in America, Red Sox beat reporter Ian Brown, because he is about to forsake the snow for the sun. I'm not sure anybody's happier to get to spring training this year than Red Sox scribes. We will be talking all about the various questions facing this very interesting team. And Ian, I want to start with the outfield, because that seems to be the area of greatest sort of unsettledness. The depth chart has a guy at every position, but I also think there are a lot of questions. What do they do? How does Shane Victorino fit in? Where does Alan Craig fit? How do you see the outfield shaking down? And particularly as spring starts, how do you see them apportioning playing time and kind of making sure they get a read on what they've got with all these guys?
Yeah, it's really a tough one to project because, you know, it's just hard to look at a baseball team and look at Shane Victorino and Alan Craig, given their track records, and say, okay, these two guys are going to come off the bench. I mean, you have a guy in Craig who was, you know, one of the best hitters in the National League or for the Cardinals not that long ago, really. And you have a guy in Victorino who helped the Red Sox win a World Series as a really an integral part of that team not too long ago. And now you just have this logjam. I think with Shane, they're really going to, you know, wait to see what they have in camp to see how healthy he is and maybe kind of bring him along slowly and maybe not rush him and maybe see if they can talk him into starting the season a little late. That would give them some time to monitor some of these younger players earlier in the year. And Alan Craig is another tricky one because, you know, you look at Alan Craig on this year's Red Sox and you say, you know, he really doesn't fit. There really isn't a place for him. And then you look at a Mike Napoli expiring contract at the end of the year and you say, boy, Alan Craig, if he can regain his form that he had in St. Louis, would really look nice as your first baseman next season in 2016, and not at a bad contract either. So I think that they're still in the process where they're going to look at how all these pieces fit together in spring training. And Ben Cherington doesn't feel, you know, rushed to make a decision. You know, John Farrell doesn't have to write out a lineup card until April 6th, and I think they're going to inventory the health, and they're going to inventory everyone. And if everyone is healthy and productive, you know, by the end of spring training, you know, clearly somebody is going to have to be traded, or you know, they're going to have to send Mookie Betts down to the minor leagues, which they really don't want to do either.
Are there some of these guys who might see time other places? I mean, does first base become an opportunity, not so much in the regular season, but become an opportunity, again, to look at Craig or even a guy like Nava? I mean, it just seems like they're going to have to get awfully creative just to get at bats, just, again, just to see what they've got before you even get to making the decisions. They got to see what they've got.
Yeah, I mean, the one good thing, Matthew, you know this from covering the team as long as you did. In spring training, there's always ways to find guys at bats because, you know, you have split squads and, you know, the first 2-3 weeks, guys aren't playing the full game. So, you know, all these guys are going to be able to get their bats in spring training. You know, they could even send some guys to the B games if they have to. So that won't be a problem. And Alan Craig will see some time at first base. Daniel Nava will see some time at first base. Look, Mike Napoli had a lot of injuries last year, too, so there's no guarantee that he's going to stay healthy. So the Red Sox would rather have too many assets than not enough. So I think that, they're perfectly willing to just go into camp and see how this all kind of comes together. And, you know, Alan Craig, when I saw him a couple weeks ago at the Red Sox had an event over at Foxwoods, he looked like a different guy than I saw last year. He looked really enthused and really excited. And last year he was just kind of, you know, his mechanics were screwed up. His foot was still, I think, screwed up. And he just kind of, it looked to me like he had a new lease on life. So I'm kind of excited to see, you know, what they have in Alan Craig, because I think the Red Sox fans don't really understand how good this guy was when he was, you know, on his game. So that's one of the biggest things I'm looking forward to seeing this spring.
Well, you're talking to the chairman of the Alan Craig fan club, so I'm eager to see him lacing some line drives off that wall. But another interesting guy, and also in that mix, is Hanley Ramirez. And I wonder kind of how they handle him, because on the one hand, he's a guy who is going to be learning a new position. They've got to get him reps in the outfield. On the other hand, he can play other places. He could play short or third or even first. Is he going to be exclusively an outfielder in the spring so that he gets the reps, or is there going to be some element of him getting some time other places to make sure he stays fresh in case he's needed somewhere else?
Yeah, right now the whole plan with Hanley Ramirez is exclusively left field. They just don't feel like they're going to need him in the other places. They want to put him out in left field every day and see what they have there. They look at Brock Holt as a guy who really can cover them all over the infield, so they really don't feel like they need to use Hanley. They'd rather just let him settle in into left field and see, you know, Hanley Ramirez is going to get to camp as early as this week, I think, you know, which is about 10 days or so before position players even do, to work with Coach Arnie Baylor on kind of mastering that replica Green Monster that they have down there in Florida. So I think that, you know, by the time the exhibition games have started, Hanley will have had a pretty good amount of reps out there. It'll be interesting to see how comfortable he is as an outfielder. That's another, going to be one of the fascinating stories for the Red Sox this spring.
I look at the depth chart here, and it's pretty clear what the plan is at catcher. And yet, even so, is it fair to say that that's going to be one of the spots that's scrutinized most closely, again, just to kind of see what they've got as they look to go into the season with Vasquez and Hannigan?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that they are very high on Christian Vasquez. And, you know, the one thing is every team wants a top defensive catcher, somebody who can control a game, somebody who can cut down a running game. And Vasquez can already do all those things. So as long as he's not what Jackie Bradley Jr. was offensively last year, which is, in that case, you just no longer live with an elite defender, I think they feel like they're going to be okay. They're going to at least hold their own at catcher as long as, you know, Vasquez can be sort of serviceable offensively. They're that excited about his defense. And they like the depth that Hannigan gives them. They think that he can play a little more than the average backup catcher, kind of slide into that sort of David Ross role, if you will. So I think they feel good that these two guys can hold it down until, you know, maybe Swihart will be ready at some point this season. Maybe he won't, but I think that they feel pretty good behind the plate.
How much of a question is the bullpen? Not necessarily the back, but just seems like there are a lot of pieces and a lot of good pieces, but it also seems like it's not entirely clear how they all fit together. Are they going to be sort of going through trying to figure out how that bullpen fits together this spring?
Yeah, I believe that the bullpen is not totally set as far as usage. And it reminds me kind of 2 years ago when you came into camp and you had Joel Hanrahan, and you had Andrew Bailey, and you had Koji, who you really didn't really know a whole lot about at the time, and you're just sort of seeing how it all fit together. And they went through, if you remember, 2 or 3 closers before learning in about June, hey, Koji Uehara is their closer, and he wound up having kind of a historic season. So I think they're kind of willing to let this play out again. I mean, Koji is the closer right now, but, you know, you do have in the back of your mind that, hey, this guy struggled last September. But what the Red Sox feel they've done, they feel like they've added some chips who could possibly slide into that role if Koji falters again. You have Tozawa, who's a pretty good young pitcher. You have Agando now, who I think that could be one of the underrated signings of the offseason if he can kind of regain some of the form he had before the elbow hurt him last year. So, yeah, I think that they're going to take a look at the arms and take inventory in the spring.
Is there any likelihood at all of a surprise in the starting rotation, or is it five guys set and that's what they're going to go with?
Yeah, no, everyone's healthy, and this is your five-man rotation. I mean, they've been pretty clear that Justin Masterson is not kind of competing for a spot as bad as he was last year. He is a guy who always, you always have a tendency to say, oh, he can be a swing man. You know, he's done that in the past. Now, they've committed to Masterson as a starter and the other four guys as well. So this is the rotation that you're going to see. And I get the sense that this rotation, I kind of wrote about this yesterday a little bit, but this rotation's got a little fire in them right now. I think they're all tired of hearing how they don't have an ace, and they feel like people are kind of, dissing them. And they're really not. They're just kind of saying what they are. But these guys feel a little dissed, and they feel, I think collectively, they feel, kind of a mission to prove that, any one of these guys could be an ace on a given night. So, we'll see if that comes to fruition.
What are you expecting in the regular season, but even just this spring, from Clay Buchholz? I mean, it seems like, I think it's probably fair to say there's no bigger variable on this club than Buchholz, because he can pitch like a one, and he can pitch like a guy who shouldn't be in the rotation. I mean, what are you expecting to see from him?
Yeah, here's how I feel about Clay Buchholz. I believe that when he's had a good winter, where he's not rehabbing from injuries, he's generally gotten off to a good start. When he's had to be able to have a productive spring like he's going to be able to have this year, where he's not going to be on any restrictions, he's not going to have anything in the back of his mind, I really think that he's going to get off to a good start this season. Now, that's not the whole answer, though, because with Buchholz, how long is that going to last? In 2013, he was the best, I thought, even better than Max Scherzer for the first 2 months of the 2013 season. He was that good, and he was right in the conversation for Cy Young. And then the shoulder thing went down, and it seemed like it was just going to be a couple weeks, and it turned into a couple months. And he really hasn't been the same since that, because last year he was sort of regaining his confidence. So I do think he's going to start quickly. The question is whether he can finally put it together for a full season, and that's what we're waiting to see here.
All right. Well, Ian Brown, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and safe travels to sunny Florida.